I invite you into the endless expanse, where we'll examine together paranormal topics such as cryptids, time shifts, hauntings, magic in the occult, as well as conspiracies, cover-ups, and macabre true crime. Now, let's pique each other's interests by adding convincing arguments to what these enigmas could be. That being said, our journey starts where light ends and darkness begins. You may still want to check your door locks, window screens, and illuminate those dark corners before settling in for our dissection of these encounters. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Endless Expanse podcast. I'm your host, Eric Huber. I'm going to try to put out weekly paranormal content, and I'm deeply interested in getting to the bottom of all these UFO sightings lately. Getting some proof of all those creepy cryptids lurking in the bushes or crossing the road in front of us at night. Now, I grew up and spent about 35 years in Las Vegas. As we all know, there's lots of great paranormal researchers from that area. My family and I like to adventure, go off-roading, camping, and really discuss all these strange things that go bump in the night. I had some great stories from my dad and my uncles and various friends I've met along the way. But about 6 years ago, we decided to cruise around the country in a travel trailer and see all kinds of great things and some haunted locations. But in the end, we ended up in the East Coast. It's great being here in North Carolina and having lots of cool ways to adventure and all the centuries of history that you just don't have in the West. But I do miss having a local sounding board for all these interesting topics, so that's what we're trying to achieve here. This whole podcast show and website is dependent on you guys, our listeners, to make submissions on endlessexpanse.com and our email, endlessexpansepodcast@gmail.com. Now, if you have a great encounter and don't mind your name being included, use our Gmail account to send us an email. Or if you would like a chance at having your voice encounter added into the podcast, send us a voice memo from your phone. You can also send other audio evidence, like disembodied voices, cryptid cries in the dark, or anything paranormal. Small video evidence files are welcome as well. If you have that great evidence and want to remain anonymous, just ask, and we'll respect your wishes. We received an anonymous encounter from our website, endlessexpanse.com. It's about high strangeness that took place at the Nevada test site in the early to mid-60s. The following encounter was written in. This happened to my father. Just to give you some scope, he was a World War II veteran that had saw action as a tanker in the Pacific. He was never the type to brag or even talk about his wartime adventures unless you happen to hear him talking with other vets about their adventures. He was a no-nonsense type of guy. In 1962 or 63, my dad worked for the Nevada test site. This is the area they tested atomic bombs. Also included in this area of government-owned land was Area 51, S2, etc., whereas most people surmise new weaponry and spy and stealth aircraft were built and tested. He was a night shop foreman for the automotive and wheeled vehicle division. Basically, they repaired all the Jeeps, dump trucks, airplane totes, semi-trucks, drilling equipment, and security vehicles. One night at the beginning of work, he came in and looked at the clipboards of repair orders. There was a security vehicle broken down in a wash a few sectors over from him. There were certain areas they had clearance for, others they had to have a security escort. This one was a minimal clearance area, so he took off in the tow truck to go either fix the vehicle or tow it back. He headed out the barely passable gravel roads at night in the desert looking for the vehicle. Eventually, after using his cab mount searchlight, he saw a reflection off the windshield and drove over to see what the issue was. Apparently, during his excursion, the whole facility went into lockdown. This happened frequently, I guess when they were testing weapons or airplanes, they always surmised from the sounds. They would be locked into the buildings until security relieved them. Security would come and do a roll call, check records for people who had called in or were on vacation. Then they would actually padlock them into the buildings from the outside, leaving one door unlocked but guarded. This was for safety, fire, medical problems, and so on, so people could get out if absolutely necessary. There were no windows on most of the buildings at the test site for this reason. My dad was working on the truck stuck in the gully. I can't remember if it was tire stuff or fuel or ignition problems. He started hearing a klaxon or siren off in the distance. The sound never changed and seemed to be stationary. At the time, he could hear big diesel engines, like what a train sounds like. Also, stationary and the same tone or RPM. The noise piqued his interest and he started climbing the hill to see if he knew where the noise was coming from. Before he even reached the top of the gully he was in, the sky lit up. A whitish blue beam came up on the other side of the hill and was so intense it lit up the clouds above it. This was lit up for about 10 to 30 seconds. He then heard the diesel engines droning in the background start to rev after the intense beam came on, then subdue after it turned off. He thought maybe these were huge generators powering the light. Now, back in the early 60s, they didn't really have lasers or that intensity and color of light available. Maybe this was early testing of lasers or some beam weapon. He kept working his way up the hill, when about 5 minutes later, the same alarm sequence and diesel engine spinning up and beam firing happened again. This time the beam was being moved back and forth slightly and for a longer amount of time. And then three, I don't know if there were planes, UFOs, helicopters, started circling around this beam, but awkwardly. He said they were yellow or orange orbs, no strobe or nav lighting visible, and kind of swerved around fast like three moths hitting or flying around a light bulb. He didn't figure they were planes or helicopters as it was way too fast and erratic for that. At the time, he wondered if the beam was creating these orbs or casting them off like a welder, similar to what a torch or a plasma cutter does to metal. As he kept climbing to see what this would look like from the hilltop, he heard another weird noise. This sounded like a jet engine, and then whirring. Helicopters were rare back then, but he knew that was what was flying around. He heard and then saw this helicopter flying a pattern and shining spotlights down, searching for something. It is pitch black out there. After a few minutes, he realized maybe he should head back, as he may be getting nuked or getting hit with some sort of radiation or something if he goes to the top of that hill. Also, he's probably seeing something he shouldn't have. He came back and finished working on the truck. As he was putting his tools away, the helicopter, still flying a grid pattern in the background, all of a sudden spotlights him. It did a few passes and then headed off. He figured the pilots were just goofing around and were running low on fuel and headed back. As he started doing a test drive on the truck he just fixed, he thought, maybe I should drive over my footprints. I probably shouldn't be here right now. After he did that, he was deciding if he was going to tow the truck back or leave it for the security detail to get the next day. He could hear Jeeps in the distance. He was very familiar with the little four-cylinder tractor-sounding motor from his days in the Army. He then saw headlights coming way down the dirt road headed his way. After a few minutes, they were using hunting-style handheld spotlights looking around. They flashed in his direction. Then after a few sweeps, spotlighted him the whole time while driving towards him. Three Jeeps with three guys in each one of them roll up and pull rifles on him. They aren't the normal whack-and-hut security guys. These were GIs with fatigues, but with no markings. They start screaming, "What's your name? What department are you? Why didn't you call back on the radio?" He explained what he's doing here, and they wanted to argue everything. they said the truck works fine. He says, yeah, because I just fixed it. The bad parts are in the tow truck in a box. Then they said, you didn't call back on your radio. I never heard anything on my channel all night. So they tested it with another Jeep, and his radio worked fine. They then claimed, you're in deep shit. Get in this Jeep. He gets in one of the Jeeps on the passenger side, with a guy pointing a gun at him from the back seat. He said then they were just driving and driving and driving for at least an hour. Nobody said anything. Once they hit a paved road in the middle of the test site, they drove for a long while further. My dad then asks, where the hell are we going, Tonopah? The driver laughed and said, nope, but damn close. The only other thing the driver said with a weird stare was, well, good thing you were staying busy out there working on that truck. You got it fixed and were under the hood the whole time, and it's probably hard to see anything working with just a flashlight out there. Of course, my dad was smart enough to take this as a meaning that he shouldn't have seen anything out there. Finally, after all that driving, they got to some buildings and airplane hangars. They drove into one of the buildings and escorted him into a nondescript office. There were no names on the doors or personal things on the desks, just furniture and a couple lamps. Finally, after waiting in there for a while, two guys in white button-down shirts and ties came in and said, you better call your wife if you need to. You're not going home tonight. Tell her not to wait up. The man then asked for my dad's phone number. He dialed it. He hands the phone to my dad. After my mom picked up the phone, the man covered the mouthpiece and said, keep it real basic. You're working overtime due to an emergency. So that's basically what my dad said to my mom. I remember her being worried and said he sounded off or very tired on the phone. The two men then quizzed my dad for about 2 hours and asked the same question. Where's your ID? Why were you out there, etc.? Over and over. Basically the same question said in different ways with different words. I guess to try to catch him up in a lie. Finally, my dad said, what is the big deal? I didn't answer the radio? I never got the call. I didn't get a signal, probably because I was down in a gulch. What radio did you call me from? That guy in the Jeep that tested my radio was only 30 feet away. Of course the damn radio worked. Turns out one of the guys questioning him tried to radio the other Jeep team that stayed behind. No answer from them. So that kind of proved that the radios didn't work so good in that gully. After the inquisition and them making multiple phone calls and radio calls, they drove him back to the parking lot where his car was at and told him not to return to work unless we call you. So he came home, and I can just remember him not wanting to talk about it. But my mom was wondering if he quit or got fired. She was really worried, not only because of the scary non-disclosure, ruin your life if you say anything type of talk that they told my dad about, but my mom and dad also had me and three other brothers to take care of, and he had decent insurance working for the government, and she was worried about losing that. 3 days later, he got a call asking him to come back to work. It's been a big misunderstanding and all that. The guys that he worked with in the garage told him those same guys came down to the garage and interviewed all of them and asked when and why my dad left that day. And they took a bunch of the work orders and parts, paperwork, tested the radio at the shop, and the truck my dad was driving. They explained he left about an hour before the lockdown, told security he was out there, and the security tried to call my dad on the radio. They then sent a guy to look for him, but he gave up an hour into the search because the security guard himself had to go into lockdown at a later time, probably before whatever that thing was that they were testing. Anyway, thanks for letting me share this story, even if it was my dad's. I just remember how worried he was those few days. I was a junior in high school at the time, and remember being pissed I couldn't use the car to go out on a date, I never figured out if it was his work saying you couldn't go anywhere, your kids couldn't go anywhere, or if it was a financial thing because they didn't know if he was going to lose his job. My dad finally told me this whole story when he and I were alone deer hunting a few years later. He was a man of few words, but the detail and look in his eyes telling me this made me realize this was a major thing for him in his life. I asked him for more details and a couple other times, and he didn't want to talk about it. But I penned this out right after he told me, due to my own experiences. One day, I'll share some more. Thanks for letting me share, and thanks for the website. Well, that's an interesting story. It really makes me wonder about these weapons and airplanes that they're testing out there. I realize this took place a long time ago, but it's still interesting about how they handled security back then. Also, I wonder what they were testing. Do you think it was a laser weapon or some sort of force field? And what were those things flying around? Do you think they were just our airplanes or helicopters? Do you think it was something coming off of the beam itself? I don't know. But you guys should definitely email us, let us know, or send us a voice memo. We can include it in our future episodes. Stick around for another encounter coming up right after this. I recently obtained this story while speaking about the encounter you just heard. The man said his name was Ron from Wisconsin. He told me he was an independent truck driver that leased his own truck. He was asked if he wanted to take on a high priority load to a military installation in Nevada. It paid well and he wanted to head west to be on schedule for another pickup in a few days. He headed into the yard for pickup, where several trailers of different types are waiting to be picked up. He arrived at the yard and there was an SUV with US government plates awaiting at the trailer. There was an enlisted man and two men in plain dress. They asked him if he was from trucking company to take the load to the location in Nevada. He stated yes, and then was asked for his IDs and his company logbook. This was kind of odd, but he agreed. The other man spoke up and said, "We will need to do a search of your truck, check things over, and have some paperwork for you to sign." While the first man was looking at his information and taking pictures of his documents and his truck, he asked if he was in some sort of trouble. The man laughed and said, "No, this is just procedure for where you're going." This man then gave him a tour of the trailer. It was your standard 50-foot tractor trailer, hard sides, not a reefer unit, but with extra locks on the back. He pointed out there was tattletale stickers and various lead-sealed cable tags, similar to what you find on your power meter if you look outside. The man reiterated not to stop, unless it is at one of the pre-selected fuel or rest areas. He then said, "We'll know if you do." Ron wondered while he was hooking up the trailer and heading out of the lot, "What the hell am I hauling? And what does 'we'll know if you do' mean? Did they put a tracker or something on my truck?" He didn't want to start poking around on his own. He figured he better just leave it alone. He said he was worried at any of the stops that he made to leave the truck alone for even a few minutes to use the restroom. He checked all the seals and locks on the doors any time he walked away from the truck. He said he even started to worry about being hijacked or something on the few side chute roads that he had to take that weren't on the main highway. At this point, he was just glad to get to the Air Force base. When he arrived at the base, he was handed documents by the guard, and a few minutes later, an Air Force service truck pulled in front of him, and the driver yelled to "follow me." They drove in a ways to a repair shop with other big military vehicles. Once he parked, they took him to a local hotel down the road and said, "Everything is paid for. We'll pick you up at 7 a.m. out front." He was assured his truck would be secured and refueled for him and ready to go in the morning. He said he couldn't wait to get some rest and sleep in a real bed for a night. Although he had trouble sleeping, worrying about the trailer. They picked him up at 7 a.m., just like they said, and offered to get him some breakfast. He did a drive-through because at this point, he wanted to get on the road and get this load over with. They then drove together into the area where the truck was parked, and they looked all over the truck and trailer together to ensure its safety. They then handed him his new day's allotted stops, reiterated that the truck has been fueled up. They also said don't worry about the log, they would take care of it. I'm assuming this is because the leg of the trip was over the mileage or hours of the driven day. I'm not really sure how this works. After the long drive, he finally arrived at a road in the middle of nowhere, close to the town of Rachel, Nevada. His GPS took him to the entrance gate at the end of this road. There wasn't much to see at this gate, a few small buildings and lots of chain-link fences. He pulled up to the gate, and even before he could say anything, they directed him to a parking area. A guard came out and followed him to the area, directing where to park at. The guard retrieved his paperwork and asked him if he wanted to take a break or relieve himself, which he just did about a half hour earlier because he had stopped for fuel. The guard then explained to him, "You'll have another long drive. Are you sure?" And so he did, since he had been driving so long and they had a restroom at the guard shack area. When he returned to his truck with the guard, another guard was cleaning his windows with a squeegee and putting on blackout shades. Ron explained that these appeared to be vinyl padded covers, pre-cut to a rough size of all semi-truck windows. They had suction cups and magnets on them to keep them in place. The guard standing next to him explained, "We have a lot of high security areas around here. These will block your view of anything." Then he asked if the man applying the window covers could look inside the truck. Then the man spent about 10 minutes searching his truck and apparently disabling the GPS unit or jamming it somehow. The guards then took his cell phone, logbook, and driver's license and gave him instructions that he had about an hour and 20 minute drive. They asked if he wanted a disposable urine bottle, which he declined since he had something similar in the truck. The guard said, "You will be following a security vehicle and being followed by another vehicle. Do not stop. Do not exceed 45 miles per hour. When they stop, you stop. And do not get out of the truck. This is your time to take a piss if you need to. We will disconnect the trailer." He got in the truck and it had a 12 inch by 12 inch cutout in the window covering so he could just see the vehicle in front of him. This was now a military vehicle and not the white SUVs and security guard outfits that the gate guards had on. So he traveled a ways and noticed his navigation system had the no signal screen up. He drove for what seemed like more than an hour and a half, but said it was a very boring, nerve-wracking drive to drive so slow and keep the front guard in his little porthole that he could see out of. He assumed this porthole, and it being at nighttime when he was scheduled to arrive, would keep him from identifying where he was spatially or seeing anything off in the distance. They finally pulled over near some warehouses and hangars from what he could see while turning once on the road coming in. Someone came up and yelled on the other side of his window that he turn the truck off, set the truck and trailer brake, do not exit the vehicle, you can take a 5 minute break in the cab. Once again, do not get out of the vehicle. He could then feel guys crawling around on his truck and felt the suspension being offloaded from the guys obviously lifting the trailer up and pulling it off of the fifth wheel hitch. He then heard another huge diesel vehicle drive up and could barely see in the reflection of the back window on the security vehicle. It was one of those big front cab military trucks. He was startled again when another yelling at the window, "You got about 1 minute till we leave. The trailer has been disconnected. You may start your truck and pull off the trailer slowly. Then follow the vehicle in front of you. Do not exceed 45 miles per hour. And so he did. It was basically the same trip in reverse. He kind of felt like maybe they took some other roads to confuse him. They then returned to the main gate area after stopping, another scare from yelling out the window. Shut off your engine and set the brake. Prepare to exit the vehicle. The guard then began removing the window coverings, and he was back at the interior of the same gate where he entered the facility. The same guard from earlier motioned him to get out of the truck. That guard then gave him his ID and his logbook back. And the other guard from earlier again crawled around the truck and messed around with the navigation system. The guard then told him he had a motel room waiting for him in Las Vegas and gave him the address of the motel. He then gave Ron $60 and told him to get a good dinner and a breakfast. He reminded him about the paper he signed and said, "Well, you know you were never here." Ron pulled away and noticed his navigation system was now working again. He pulled into the motel and he grabbed his belongings and settled in. Out of curiosity, he looked at his driver's logbook and it was filled out with some different stops. And his final stop was Nellis Air Force Base, which obviously wasn't true, as he passed that long before the road leading into the test site gate near Rachel, Nevada. Ron claimed he was offered another one of these driving gigs about a year later, but he passed on it. The pay was the same and there was a lot of extra hassle, and he didn't really feel comfortable worrying about what he was carrying and didn't like that they changed the logbooks. I asked him why he shared this with me, if there was a non-disclosure he signed. He said, "Well, I figured since I'm long since retired, I never saw any little green men, and they have now admitted Area 51 is a real installation. I'm really not that worried about it." He then told me, "Hey man, we all want to know what's really going on out there. Besides, do I really look like a Ron to you?" He then winked at me and walked away. Wow, sorry about that guys, I got a little crazy with the acid jazz. I just finished watching a whole buttload of Cowboy Bebop. Pretty sweet. Anyway, when I tell you, even though his name wasn't really Ron, he seemed genuine when he told me this story. And though I was a little disappointed there wasn't any gray aliens or skinwalkers in this tale, I thought it was pretty unique how you just run across these stories sometimes. I was talking about the test site worker story with some of my coworkers at a car show. This gentleman overheard and came over and told me his tale. Well, I thought it was interesting enough to add it into our show. I hope you guys like it. What do you think he was hauling in there? Spaceship parts? Just your standard General Dynamics fusion reactors? Who knows? But it had to be something important. I really appreciate y'all listening in. Next week we'll have some pretty interesting ghost tales. Hopefully I'll even have some footage to add to the website. If you guys want to add anything about a haunted encounter you've had yourself, please go on ahead and submit either those voice memos or emails to endlessexpanse.com or endlessexpansepodcast@gmail.com. I really appreciate you guys listening. Let me know what you think of the show, good or bad. Alright, we'll catch you next time. Music in this episode was awesomely produced and provided by Kevin McLeod and Nature World 1986.